Hello, we are Terra Nova, a horror podcast hosted by Kendall and Jackie, and here we talk about everything horror. And this podcast is specifically for you, the horror fans, and the non-horror fans. If you're too scared to watch the movies, it's fine. We talk about it, we discuss it, we dissect it, we laugh about it, talk about the good, the bad, and the tropes. And we have new episodes released Tuesdays bi-weekly.
And follow us on Facebook and Instagram at TerraNova_podcast. But also feel free to reach out through email at terranova.pod@gmail.com. And most importantly, tell a friend, tell a friend, tell a friend.
And tell your dog too. Cujo.
Hello.
Hello.
Such a basic hello. yes. I'm tired.
About to start throwing in random audio sound bits for hellos. You keep playing. Not even gonna be me. You're gonna hear like the Crypt Keeper and all types of other shit.
I should bring back my pew pew pew, which I haven't done that in like so long. Like, I have not done that for so long. I should do that eventually. But yes, we are back for our, you know, Terra Talks. You guys already know what that is. We bring in a content creator and we just interview them. This is all about them. And I'm excited for this one because this person has been on our podcast for quite some time, a couple times already.
I think this is the fourth time.
I want to say, yeah, probably fourth. And we're always going back and forth on Instagram talking. And I even reached a new level of friendship with this person. I have their number now. I feel important. I feel special. But yeah, so the person we're going to be interviewing is the amazing Amira.
Oh, is that my intro? Am I here now?
Yes.
You sound like you just walked into a room where people were talking about shit. You're like, oh, you meant me. Yes.
Hi, it me.
How's it going?
I'm good. How are you guys? Thank you for having me back.
Yes.
Good, good. Everything's good.
That's rad. Yeah, I want to say it's the third time that I've been on, but honestly, I don't know anything that's happened in like the last 2 years of my life. So maybe I've been on the show 8 times and I don't know. So
yeah, maybe. I know you were here for Ringu when we did that and we did Chucky. So yeah, I think this might be the third time actually.
Yeah,
I think it is the third time. Oh, Chucky was so fun. That was a good time.
That was hilarious. Seven Heaven theme song still goes off in my head.
So. Seven
Heaven. Oh my God. Jackie, don't do it. Don't sing it, Jackie.
Okay.
I know, right? So how's it going? How's everything?
I mean, everything is good. I am here. I'm still alive. I feel like how do I put this? I sort of feel like, because as you guys know, I'm currently doing a PhD, and I sort of feel like that kind of changes the way that time moves around you. Because yeah. I spend all of this time in front of the laptop and I'm like, wow, I wrote 10 words. This is not too shabby. And then I look at the clock and it's been 6 hours. So I think that maybe... Maybe doing a PhD in anything is also a weird study in like how the time continuum works. So yeah, shit's weird, man. I don't know. I'm here though.
You basically become the Flash. I get it. Totally.
Yeah, but kind of backwards in a weird way, because I just feel like I kind of know what a sloth feels like when a sloth is going somewhere and it's like, wow, it moved 3 feet, but it took it like 2 days. Like, that's me.
That is too funny. That is too funny. The first thing I want to ask you is, what made you fall in love with horror? Like, it could be anything, like movies or just a genre in general. Like, what really made you go like, this is it, I'm in love with this genre?
Yeah, I need to hear his answer. I think we asked you before, but I always love to hear his answer just because I feel like, I don't know, maybe we need to write a book or something. Just put everyone's like first love in there, because it's always interesting to have people get into this genre, but I'll shut up now. Go ahead.
I mean, that would actually be really cute. I think, like, you know, just kind of like, you know, an anthology of everybody talking about how they got into it or why they love it. Like, you know, there are so many great horror authors and stuff that we all love. And I think it would be really interesting to get everyone's story in one place so that I can just be lazy and read that and then not talk to everybody about it. That's you guys' job.
You know what? You're right. So nobody steal that. I might actually make that happen.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I feel like people ask me this question a lot. And I feel like my answer changes sometimes because as I, you know, the longer that I exist in this realm of like doing horror, the more I realized that there were actually many moments in my life where I realized that I was, you know, that I loved the genre, that I, you know, whether it was the movies or you know, reading not Stephen King, obviously, when I was really young. Watching X-Files from behind the sofa when my mom was watching it and I was supposed to be asleep, like all of that kind of stuff. You know, but I kind of feel like I think really it kind of ties into me being fascinated by and like really obsessed with death when I was really young. I don't know exactly how that kind of came about, but I've always really been fascinated by it. Just not so much like where do we go when we die, but like the physical aspects of death and like how we die and like what happens to us in that moment. And I think an outlet for that was like watching horror and, you know, seeing people get murdered. And that it was like that moment when like, so I sound like a serial killer right now.
I do, because you just watch it like someone get murdered and you go, fascinating, but you're like six.
I'm listening to myself talk and I'm like, I feel like I've heard this said on a Dahmer interview, like. But I really did, I found that really interesting. I think it's just, you know, my interest in like the macabre really is what it comes down to. And so I think that, you know, reading Stephen King was, I think, my first introduction to horror. And there's, you know, there's a lot of death in those books as well. Yep. I think first one I read, I think, was Pet Sematary. You can't say it any other way. And it sort of just spiraled from there. And like, even when I wasn't, you know, writing horror fiction or, you know, way before I got into this PhD, I mean, I was studying forensic anthropology. So that in itself, I mean, the whole, you're just working with death all the time. And I did that for about 4 years. Yeah. So like, I've seen some pretty dark stuff. And I think it was
Dexter.
Okay, listen though, but like, that's one of the shows that made me go, maybe I want to be a crime scene photographer. Like, I was like 18 years old and my mom's like, what is wrong with you? And I was like, I don't know. You made me. Like, so yeah, I kind of think it's just, you know, my love of horror comes from my fascination with death and my love of the macabre, and it's taken me to some really interesting places in my life. It's led me to some really fascinating research projects. I mean, working hands-on with the dead and like working, you know, I traveled to in 2016 or 17, I actually spent a summer working in Romania at an excavation site, basically just doing like osteological analysis of the skeletal remains that we were digging up there. And that was really, really cool. And before you say anything, no, we didn't find any vampires while we were there, because that question's always next. But yeah, I mean, I've worked in Amsterdam as well. I worked on a collection of children's skulls looking for, I mean, this is kind of like boring science side, but it's called Cribra orbitalia. And it's basically like porosities that appear in the upper parts of your eye sockets in the bone. And it can sometimes be like related to poor health issues. And so I was interested in that. If we want to get even creepier, like my main interest really lies in children and child health and child maltreatment and stuff like that. So a lot of the collections that I've worked with have been children's remains. And so my advisor made a joke that, you know, my reputation is like just is the Dr. Dead baby once I finish this PhD. So it's kind of a weird nickname to get when you're on the other side of 30, but I'll take it. It's cool, whatever, yeah.
That's cool, that's dope.
Honestly, I do have one question. It's about vampires, but it's not really whether or not you found it. I want to know, are you one? Does that sound like 10 lifetimes in one person? So I'm just wondering, some interview with the vampire shit that we wasn't aware of when me and Jackie hit record?
Well, I mean, it's funny because, like, I get that a lot where people are like, oh, you know, I feel like you've lived like 1,000 lives. And in a weird way, I kind of have. Like, not a lot of people know this, but I spent 10 years in New York working as a hairstylist in Brooklyn. And so that was when I first graduated from high school, I wanted to do something spooky with my life, but didn't know what. And I really loved photography. So I started taking all these spooky photos and I went to art school in Boston, but I dropped out because I thought I was too cool for school because school was for fools, and I left. And then I moved to New York, and that's when I started doing the hairstylist thing. I went to beauty school. I needed to support myself. I needed a job, you know, like my parents weren't able to financially fund my weird zany adventures, and I would have much rather have lived under a bridge than move back in with my parents. So I went to beauty school and I was doing hair, but I at the same time, like, I never really let go of like my interest in spooky stuff, my interest in horror, like my interest in, you know, dead stuff. Like, that kind of always stayed with me. So I feel like I spent a lot of time just like self-educating on the side and like reading, you know, mostly academic stuff. I feel like about, like, I don't know, funerary cannibalism is so fascinating to me. And like there's like the Yanomamo tribe in South America that would practice this. And then, you know, because of colonialism, which is, we can all agree, is bad. Know, that practice got it became criminalized, so they can't do it anymore. But I mean, just that kind of stuff was just like what I kind of thought about it all the time. And I think in my late 20s I was like, I don't want to do this hair thing anymore. It gives me a lot of anxiety, like bitches be crazy about their hair and I can't handle it. And I just decided to switch gears and go back to college. And I got an undergraduate degree in physical anthropology from Hunter in New York.
Nice.
Hunter College, baby.
Nice.
Yeah. I went to Hunter.
And Jackie went to CUNY as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, hell yeah, dude. CUNY forever. I love the CUNY system. It's great. It's so good. It's like, oh, what? You're a single mom with four kids and you want to get your degree? We'll figure it out. And like, you know, you could take a class at like 10 p.m. It's insane. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
So I studied there, and then I just decided to go for it and go for the master's and applied to University College London. And I, in that year before I started my degrees, you know, when I did another project in Greece as well, where I was looking at baby skeletons in jars from ancient Greece, like fucking nuts, like
Whoa. The
weird places that your interest in one particular thing can take you, especially if that thing you're interested in is literally being dead. I just want to die.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe I'm like living vicariously through like all the skeletons. I don't know, like maybe I'm just like, I can't wait to be you, like. But yeah, I mean, I might be a vampire. I know that was a really long-winded way to answer that question. I don't know if vampire lore says that I'm allowed to or not, but I don't know, dude, maybe I am. Like, I wish I could just sleep all the time, like, in the dirt. That would be cool. Sounds nice and cozy in there. Guys, please, don't call my therapist, please. I'm not going to send her this.
Oh, God, that's too funny. I think yesterday, Girl That's Scary put a poll on Twitter, and they were just like, which way you want to be, a vampire or a werewolf? And I was just like, jokes on you all, because I'm technically a vampire. The sun can literally kill me, so ha ha ha.
I really love that. I honestly, like, I really loved Vampire in the Bronx, because I mean, obviously we have Blade, but like, I really, all these vampires are like super pasty, and I just love the idea of like, like a Latin vampire. Yeah, yeah. Like that's so much. That's so much more exciting to me. It's so spicy. Like bam, that's so good.
Mm-hmm. That is too funny. I think the next one when I get into, because I think everyone's kind of like curious about how that started, is horror chromatic. How did that come to life?
Oh yeah. So I mean, I'm trying to remember exactly when I came up with the idea for it, because I think it might have been I'm sad, it's COVID, I need something to do with my time, and I, you know, decided to come up with this blog thing. But I mean, really, just kind of the birth of it was just, I felt like everything that I was seeing in that sphere kind of all looked the same to me. Like, everything was mm-hmm. really focused on just, like, I mean, yeah, we all love Michael and Freddy and Jason. I mean, I'm, like, yeah, for me, like, the jury's still out on some of that stuff. But I honestly, like, I just kept seeing the same stuff over and over again. And I felt like there were so many other films that weren't getting the attention that I thought that they deserved, you know? And, or, like, more, like, narratives that weren't getting the attention that they deserved. And so I thought it would be interesting to just bring in people who have a bit of a more diverse way of looking at the genre, to talk about it from a different perspective. Because I think, you know, when if you grow up in trauma and you watch trauma, mm-hmm. your reaction to it is going to be entirely different than someone mm-hmm. else. You know, and so I kind of thought, let me do this. Let me try to shine some light on, and you know, on diversity in horror. And I think it's really cool because, like, once I made the project, once I created the blog, then I started finding other people who were doing the same thing, and it was neat to find this little community of people who were also trying to bring these stories to the front. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the site has taken a back seat this year to my PhD. I like say it and like my tongue gets itchy. I'm like, my PhD. but I do, I plan on bringing it back in the new year with sort of a little bit of a revamp. It is going to be slow going. It's going to be a trickle as opposed to a waterfall, because it, you know, as with most projects, you guys know firsthand, you know, it's just you who's doing it, you know?
Yeah, so it's a process.
It's a process. And I feel like in the past as well, I was going more for quantity over quality, which, you know, was not saying that, like, you know, everything I was getting from my contributors is awesome. But I think for myself personally, I was trying too hard to churn out material, and I wasn't putting enough heart into it. And I think I got kind of burnt out. But the PhD has taught me how to better manage my time and better approach this kind of stuff and figure out how to find balance in my life so that I can bring cool content to you guys every now and then while keeping all the hair on my head and not having it fall out to the floor, which is kind of what was starting to happen. So. But yeah, I mean, I really think it was just born of me feeling like I wasn't reading the stuff that I wanted to read. And so why not make it? And why not give people who feel the same way a place to have these conversations and talk a little bit about, you know, just the movies that aren't getting the attention, because we're really just keep watching white dudes kill people. And I'm like, fuck, that's the real world. Like, let's watch something else. So
sad but true.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I really feel like I'm really excited to bring it back with a new little twist and maybe a bit more media and stuff. So it's gonna happen, guys. I swear.
That's amazing. That's pretty cool. Kendall, wanna do any questions?
I didn't have any particular question at the moment, but I kind of just wanted to comment on the whole burning out thing, because that is a real thing, especially in this day and age of content creation, as people call it, which I have a touch and go feel about that phrase, because I feel like content just sounds too generic. And it sounds easy, but it's really a hell of a process. Anyone who creates anything for anything, right? Whether it's a podcast, a TV show, a web series, whatever the hell you make, like it is a hell of a process. And trying to like chut it out week after week is a thing. Like it is a thing. And you know, me and Jackie always talked about like how we don't want this doing this podcast to feel like a job. Because at that point, mm-hmm. we'll probably both quit at the same time.
Yeah.
So we're both like, nah, if that day comes, we just going to be like, all right, guys. So this 2-minute recording is the last episode of Terra Nova. Have a good one. Peace out. Like, yeah. We don't want it to come to that. Because
no, that wasn't like, even 2 minutes. That was like 5 seconds.
Exactly. The rest of it would probably just be Jackie crying. But like, I just feel like, man, I'm done. So yeah, no, it's definitely a big deal. Like you got to kind of pace yourself. And I don't know. I've always found myself asking the question of like, is it worth it to just make stuff to make stuff, or is or was the point of me doing it to enjoy it? So that kind of keeps me grounded. Like that's partly why we went to like a kind of a bi-weekly release as well. Cause we were just like, this is fun, but man, we got a bunch of other things we also need to do. And we need to make sure we, you know, time commit in a way that makes sense and doesn't just seem like we're just throwing out episodes for the sake of throwing out episodes, because we actually do enjoy every episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And I feel like too, it's like, you know, when you said like, oh, content creation, and like I was gonna go like, in this economy, because it's not it's also like, you know, to do these things that we love, like, you know, for me, like I do love writing fiction on the side. And, you know, the PhD, it's not like I'm making mega bucks doing this, you know? And so, like, mm-hmm. any labor of love that you do, the money that you're making is in pride, right? But, like, that doesn't put food on the table. Like, you're proud of your project, and you are so happy yep. that you've done it, and you feel good about it. But it's just, you know, it's, like, it's not sustainable. And I feel like a lot of people end up working for free because of the pressure to create content, and so you start losing the quality because you're just turning stuff out over like constantly to keep up your follows and keep up your listeners and all of this stuff. And I actually think like I would much rather wait 2 weeks for an episode that I know is going to be really, really fucking good than get an episode, you know, 1 or 2 episodes a week, and knowing you guys are tired, you're not going to put the same amount of heart into it, and yeah. then you're not going to want to do it, and then I'm going to be sad, and maybe the jokes won't be as funny. And so I think you guys did a really good thing, like kind of like pacing it out like that. I think people really need to take a bit more control back over their lives, and don't let that demand to create content like, you know, take over, because the internet is so transient and stuff moves so quickly and there's so much turnover that like it's, you know, you have to look out for yourself. I think the internet has made us forget ourselves a little bit, even though all we yeah. do is post ourselves, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It definitely does. And also to go back to what you both were saying, I remember recently my friend was telling me he was feeling burnout because he's also an art teacher just like I am. And it's crazy how much society has drilled into people our age. The hustle life is what you have to go for. The grinding life is what you have to go for. You're not achieving it if you're not grinding. It's just like, that's not good, because that messes with you mentally and emotionally. And then, yeah, like you end up not liking what you're doing. It throws you off. You just see it as that I'm just here to get paid and that's it. That's it. I don't care about what happens. I feel like that stigma definitely has to end. And I see all the time, not just, but anything like anything creative, you know, because content creating, that's creative. Podcast is creative. Blogging is creative.
Yeah.
You know, and I feel like it's definitely draining and very toxic. You know, I hate hearing that word of like, you gotta hustle. Like, no, I don't. Why do I have to hustle? You know? Like, why do I
no,
have to
honestly.
Have... Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, why do I have to have, like, 2, 3, 4 jobs at the same time just to survive? Like, that's not normal. And that's not healthy.
Yeah, I really feel like this is... And, I think that this kind of ties into, like, you know, this... the, you know, my project and, like, the idea of, like, being a woman in academia and stuff like that is just... this like girl boss hustle culture is so mm-hmm. toxic. It's so bad. because it kind of, it really just, it centers you and only you, and you kind of forget about community. You kind of forget about, it's just like this very like individualist sort of way of looking at the world, and you end up leaving people behind, and it's super isolating. And like, I mean, I know I see some people online who are just like, you know, like they're doing their PhDs, and like a PhD is already isolating. But when you're always posting about hustling and girl bossing and like all of this stuff, I'm like, sweetie, are you okay? But also like, you know, I really do. Like, I wonder, I'm like, because it's not sustainable at all. And I really think that there's something to be said about like we really like need to shift gears and switch back to working with each other and like not being so hyper obsessed with, oh, well, I need to climb the ladder, and you're just leaving everybody behind. And then, you know, well, you're up there by yourself, you know, and you're not taking anybody with you. And I think that it's really important to like really cut the hustle and grind nonsense and just kind of like, I don't know, dude, like really like touch a little bit of grass and like reconnect people around you and people outside. And like, you know, even it sounds really cheesy, but like even reconnect a bit with like nature and like the world around you and stuff like that. Yeah. Because there's so much more out there than like working yourself to the bone. For what? You're gonna miss out on so much of life just because of this whole idea of like, and I understand as well that like, you know, the economy has kind of put us in a place. I mean, I'm speaking as an American, but also like I live in the UK, and there's some crazy economic stuff happening right now. And so people really feel like you have to, you know, otherwise you can't eat. But I also think if there's a level of us looking out for each other, it will make it a lot easier to like get through shit time. So I'm a very anti hustle culture, anti girl bossing. I'm an anti girl boss. So yeah, I don't know, and I mean maybe it works for some people, I don't know. I'm not like,
I don't think it does though. I think the people who say it's working for them, they end up at some point rebranding into how they're anti what they were. That's the thing that's also really weird about like it's not even a social media thing, it's just like, I guess you could say it's a branding and perception thing now. The very thing that you're kind of, you could be anti, that someone is like pro hustle culture, when that person realizes, what, 2 years from now or 3 years from now, when other people are like, I'm not trying to hustle and bustle like that, the person will then take their story of success and then rebrand it into a story of like, I was hustle and bustle, but now I realize that wasn't the best thing for me. Like, it just becomes a branding opportunity now. It's very weird how things work now. It's like, it's not even trends anymore. I almost want to just call it like the most active version of fickleness.
It's not even trendy anymore. No, you're so right. I have noticed that as well. It's like, which I think is a good thing that there are people out there who are having this realization that like, yeah, maybe that wasn't the healthiest way to be. Maybe it wasn't the best way to be, but you don't find out until you realize like, oh shit, like I'm alone. You know, it's like, I think it kind of comes down to that. But I also think it's really, really important that like people who do that kind of stuff, that, you know, we just like, we're like, welcome back, baby, like we're happy to have you, you know. Because I also think that there's, you know, part of that whole like that whole culture too is that people kind of now have this attitude of like, well, we didn't like how you were, so you can't come back and sit with us. And I think that's real nasty as well. Like, I think
it's not helpful.
No, it's not. Like, people will say uncouth shit sometimes, and people will act off the cuff. And I think the internet has made us a very unforgiving group of people, and we feel like we have to, you know, take a really strong stance and like double down about certain things, and it's made us lose our humanness a lot. And so I think it's really important to like, we need to welcome back the recovering girl bosses, because they need us right now.
Yes, I do agree.
And that's the real horror.
It is. Speaking of horror.
It is. I mean, I feel like it's also like that, it even worse when you're a person of color. Like, it's 10 times worse, because you have to, like, quote-unquote hustle that much harder because you're competing against people who are ready and want your downfall. And it's just like, it's so like, you know, it's just so infuriating. And it's really sad. It's very, very sad. Because, you know, the whole thing of loneliness, you tend to go against your own. You're competing with your own, you know?
Exactly.
And it's just like, we shouldn't be doing that. We should be going together and you know, taking down the colonizers, taking them down. And, yeah, like, it's just, like, it's very sad. Very, very sad.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, we just lost the ultimate girl boss over here in the UK. The queen died, so... I know. You know, obviously I'm being sarcastic in case no one noticed.
Oh,
that.
I know.
For the listeners who might not have picked up on that. but yeah, no, I do think that that same, like, individualistic, ideology does it just keeps subdividing us as groups. And I think that, you know, like, when you really do have to, like, you really do have to work those three jobs and you really do have to do all of that stuff, like, it's very privileged to say, like, chill out, just soak your feet in a hot tub of water and just have a bath with a bath bomb. Like, people need to put food on the table, but at the same time, I think, like, that, you know, because that community isn't there, we aren't able to help each other out and relieve each other of some of these stresses. And, you know, it's because we're just so, like, focused on just, like, looking out for our own and taking care of ourselves. And so we just, you know, we're already, like, alienated subgroups of people, and then we just isolate ourselves even more. And it's, you know, it's become a pretty lonely place, I think. And then, you know, with, like, from, like, doing the PhD and stuff like that, I was telling, my boyfriend's cousin was in town, and we were talking about, you know, women doing PhDs and, like, very small percentage of women that actually, like, finish these programs and stuff like that. And every time I jokingly post on, like, my personal Instagram all the time, like, please remind me why the fuck I'm doing this again. Like, I don't remember. And my aunt likes to send me this inspirational statistic. I can't remember what it is right now. You would think I would, because she's told me so many times. But she's like, oh, like, only like 0.0% of women of color and Latin women, you know, ever achieve something like this. So keep going, baby. Like, you got this. And that does kind of fuel my fire sometimes, because I realize that, like, this is, you know, I have dragged my ass to this place where I'm doing it because I love it, but I also feel like it feels a bit dutiful for me to, like, achieve this and accomplish this, because, you know, I it comes back to that, like, child of immigrants mentality where, like, well, I want to make my family proud, and I know that that's, you know, that fits the bill for a lot of people, but I think in my specific case, it's that I know what my family went through to come to America and to make it work, and how much they sacrificed for us. And I, you know, I want to make good on that and make them proud. So it's to me, like, just that really, like, it kind of keeps, on bad days, it keeps me going. So even though I laugh at the fact that she sends me this all the time and I'm like, this isn't helping, like, at the end of the day, it really does. It makes me feel good. So to be like, wow, like, I did something that, like, you know, my family is very proud of, and they look at me and they're like, oh, damn, like, all this stuff paid off, you know, like, leaving our home in Belize, like, coming to the States, like, all of this it's paying off in our children, and they're making something better for themselves that we couldn't have given them if we had stayed put. So I feel pretty proud of that. Do they think the way I'm doing it is really fucking weird? Yeah.
Well, that's always a part of the process, right? People want you to do what they said, but they want you to do it how they want you to do it.
Yeah. I remember, like, everyone being like, wait, so you were gonna be a scientist and now you're doing horror movies? And I was like, look, I am a scientist of horror films, okay? One thing can be both things. It's fine. Just let me do me how I'm gonna do me, but I am doing the thing, so
I think in a lot of ways, this world is still figuring out how to handle people who have a lot of interest.
Yeah.
I don't think the world has quite figured out what to do with us yet.
Yeah, no, that's really true. And I think that's sort of, that's kind of like a symptom or like an after, more of like an after effect of like during, you know, COVID. It's so weird talking about the pandemic now. It feels so far away being in the UK, but I know in America, like, it's still pretty bad. And like, I forget sometimes, like, I'll watch, like, I'll be reading the news and I'll see a picture of people like still wearing masks. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, obviously here, it's not that, I mean, it's a lot of politics, right? But I just, like, I keep forgetting. Mm-hmm. But I really do think that, like, all these people coming out with, like, all of their interests and being more open and wanting to do side projects and, like, wanting to have pick up hobbies and stuff, it came from having all of this free time over the pandemic when we were all stuck inside and stuck at home. And it kind of makes me sad because I'm like, we had all this time to cultivate things that we loved over, you know, the last couple years. But then having to like return to work and return to the way things were before, people don't have time to hold on to that stuff anymore because they have to fucking hustle. And so, it kind of bums me out because I'm like, I really loved seeing people doing stuff that they loved, like people who started doing stop motion animation and people who, you know, started podcasting and like people who started mm-hmm. writing and like making all of these beautiful things. People flourishing, and goddamn fucking capitalism, I swear to God.
It has its ups, but it definitely has its downs.
There's a lot of downs. But yeah, I don't know, I feel like it's interesting to think about this whole shift in the creative world of what you said of like people don't know how to handle people who have a lot of interests, because we've never gotten to know people on this scale. You know, you have your coworker who works with you at, you know, in your office, and then all of a sudden you find out that she's like a really good pole dancer, and you're like, well, you never would have known that before. And like,
that's literally what just happened the other day at work for me.
Someone literally
did a presentation about that, and I was like, okay, all right.
I fucking love that. That's awesome.
That is too funny.
I mean, I started making music again, like, over the pandemic. Like, it's something I hadn't done in years. And I was just like, I'm not doing much right now. And I, you know, pulled out the old keyboard and the old software and got a mic. And I started doing that kind of stuff again. And I think it's fun to remind ourselves that we're not the worth of our work. Like, we're not just our day job, you know, that we're so multifaceted. And you know, we have so much going on and so much to offer other people outside of what we do for a living. And I think it's really fun to like meet people in that way and be like, and have people feel more comfortable saying, oh yeah, I love pole dancing, before they tell you, oh, I work for an agency. You know, I think that's really fun. I wish more people pole danced and told me about it, because I'm scared to do it. So.
Oh my god, that's just too funny. The last question I want to ask, which is like kind of a big question, because you mentioned about how like, you know, you work towards a PhD, being, you know, a Latinx person yourself. I had asked this to Violet, who was on our Terror Talk before, where she's an amazing writer. And I had asked
her this. She's amazing. I love her stuff.
And I had asked her this, I'm going to ask you the same thing. Being a Latinx person, how important is this for representation, for achieving, like getting your PhD and then being, you know, this amazing like blog writer and doing all these hard contact things? Like, how important is that to you?
I mean, it's really important. I feel like there's like, I feel pulled in different directions on this, because for me, it's extremely important, because I want, you know, other young women who come from similar backgrounds to me to see that and go, oh wow, I can actually do that, you know, because like we don't, you know, like if I go to, you know, I presented at a conference on some of my research, and granted, I know I'm in the UK, but mm-hmm. I spoke at a conference and I was talking about Gruff McGruff PSAs and how they scared the shit out of kids in the States, right? And I mean, I was the only non-English person there. There was no one else. And so for me, I feel like that's important, because if there's a student in that audience who's also Latin, want them to look at me and feel empowered that they can also stand up on that stage. So I think like having that representation and me achieving this is like, I'm doing it for me, but I'm also doing it for like the women in my family who didn't feel like this is something that they could do because, you know, they literally grew up in, you know, they grew up in a poor country, and it's not something that you think about when you're young. And I see, like, I've been seeing a lot of my cousins who still live in Belize, and like I have family in Mexico as well, but like I've been seeing my cousins in Belize, they're like, they're all growing up and they're all going to college now, and they're like moving to America to go to the States. And I just feel like it brings little tears to my eyes, because I'm like, yes, there's this whole other generation of like, you know, of Latinas coming to the forefront and going into academia or like studying and getting their degrees. And I think it's amazing. I think it's really, really beautiful. And I like to think that, you know, like, you know, women like us who try to kick the door in a little bit, it's not so much for me, it's just that if I inspire someone who didn't think this is something that they could do, then I've done a good job. You know, I mean, I do this for me, obviously, because I love doing this. But it's like I was saying about, you know, my aunt sending me the little statistic. There's a little bit of it that feels like duty, but not in a bad way. You know, I just kind of...
Yeah, not a destructive way?
No, not in a... Well, I don't know. That's loaded. Doing a PhD is literally just complete and total self-destruction. So... And it's really difficult to step. I mean, I think if we were exclusively talking about me just writing fiction, then I could say, oh, yeah, no, it's not self-destructive at all. But I think anyone who enters into a PhD, they're literally just like your fingers hovering over the nuke button at all times. Like, just right above it. Like,
I'll blow it all up.
Yeah. But no, and I think, you know, like, but the other side of that as well is that it is a little bit of, It gets kind of tricky at a certain point, though, because I've noticed that, like, the more fiction that I write or the more that, you know, I present my academic work, I start to get approached solely on the fact that I am a Latina. You know what I mean? That I am Latinx.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I've started to notice that more, and I have kind of weird feelings about it, because I'm like, I want you to come to me because you think that I'm an excellent writer, not because you're like, oh, when we need to spice up this thing, you know?
Yeah.
So I find that, like, if I am contributing to an anthology, I prefer to do it if I know that, like, the entire anthology is, like, diverse, and I'm not just being brought on for, like, to, like, you know, tick a box or something like that. And it can get a little bit hairy. Like, I think especially in the UK, where, like, you know, I'm very much a minority. I've met one Mexican person here, dude. Fucking one. Only one. Since I've been here for 4 years. Yeah. And she just moved here from Mexico City to go to uni. And so, but it's kind of one of those things where I'm like, I feel like especially in academia, it gets a little bit tricky because you're not quite sure why they were originally calling you. And so mm-hmm. I think that, you know, I want to be able to be both, you know, like I want to be an excellent writer and an excellent academic. And I also want to be who I am. And I think, yeah, you end up having to, like, you know, read between the lines when you get offers for stuff. And like you feel like you kind of have to look into that publisher. You have to look into that person to see if they have a history of doing this to people. And so, yeah, I think that it does get a little bit sticky, but I think that, yeah, I don't know. I think the representation is super important. I think it's key. And I think, like, you know, like your podcast is so important as well. And you guys talk about these issues and not a lot of other podcasts do, you know? And I think I don't think that, like, that should ever leave the forefront of the conversation. I really think that, you know, having these conversations about the representation is super important. And if I can contribute to that, then I fucking will. Keeps me up at night sometimes.
Yeah, I totally get that. I think I've spoken to Jackie about this a few times before as well, like just how that is, like, you know. And I feel like that goes for almost any field, honestly, right? Because, like, I always say at the end of the day, a lot of this shit wasn't really built with us in mind.
Yeah.
So because of that, people are kind of trying to, you know, recalibrate or recalculate how they can kind of fit this into the equation. And, yeah, I used to have those same thoughts where I was sometimes like, man, are they hiring me, like, because I'm black, or they need a black guy, or they need to fill a quota, like, they trying to do something. And, you know, what really helped me get over it is I just... something I think I heard Anthony Mackie say as well, and apparently he's known for saying this on set, but I always just say, yo, cut the check. Like, you're going to have to pay for this diversity. Like, you ain't about to get it for cheap. You gonna like, it, yeah. I don't have nothing to do with the fact that you have 900 employees and 899 of them are white. I have nothing to do with that. So, for this black hire, you about to pay top dollar, because I'm not about to come in here and just give you all... Because I'm going to show up as me. Like, I don't... I think maybe at one point, maybe, now I've always, for most people, part, people who know me, they're like, Kendell is always Kendell. Like, Kendell doesn't know how to not be Kendell. So I try to do that same thing at work. Even as I, like, go through my, all the different places I worked at, if I realize, hey, this place is super white, I'm making Wu-Tang jokes. I don't care if nobody laugh. I'ma laugh, and then I'ma look at you and say, why don't you know who Wu-Tang is? Like, I'm that person. Like, I would do that at work. And I don't even care how comfortable it makes people, because I'm like, you should feel weird being in a business where you have to sell to everyone and you only know one part of culture. That's your problem. That's not mine.
Absolutely.
So that's how I try to show up to, like, all scenarios. So it's like, as long as they pay me properly, I will bring all of me presently, but I will not lose myself in doing what I do. That's kind of what keeps me sane through all of this. Because every job I've had has been heavily white. Every job.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's like, if you're getting, if they're offering me money, you better fucking believe I'm going to take it. The unfortunate part is that a lot of this is asking me to do something for free, you know, or it's like wanting me to contribute to something. And then it's like, it's my time, my labor. And it's like me adding one more, you know, plate on top of the other spinning plate. And so I feel like I've had to get a bit skeptical and, like, you know, really check if, like, if I'm doing this for free, then it's got to be good. You know, but oh my God, if they're giving me money, I don't care. I'll write.
And the other side is that we all creatives. You know how it is about creativity. Everybody want it, but nobody want to pay for it.
Yeah, exactly.
So whether you are an author, an artist, graphic designer, whatever you do creative, I don't care if you do sand art. Whatever you do creative, people ain't really trying to pay for it. They want it, though, because they need it. Like, everything we watch is creativity. All the entertainment, TV shows, movies, all the shit is creativity at the end of the day. It's just whether or not somebody's going to cut the check for you to do it.
Yeah, I read this tweet actually today. And this girl, she was talking about how, you know, she goes, there are people out there who, if you're an artist, they'll be like, or do you want to study art? They're like, why don't you study something real, like tech or like medicine or something? And she was like, I wish that people who said that for 30 days, you could never let them listen to any music in the restaurant, like anywhere they go, like anything that's made by a creative has to be removed, like ads, you know, commercials, they can't watch. Give them 30 days, nothing to read, and then let them come back and tell you that being a creative isn't a real job, you know, because you, people like that don't realize that they are surrounded by art all the time, you know. It's like you walk into the CVS and they're playing Doobie Brothers on the radio and you're tapping your foot. Like, you need the Doobie Brothers, dude. Like, you can't, you know, like, being a creative is just as much of a job as anything else. And I think, like, creatives need to be paid more. And that's just the truth. Like, we need to be paid.
Facts.
You know, so yeah, I those people can eat some rocks. I can't stand that. It's funny. I have a friend of mine. His mom, like, she's kind of she kind of thinks, like, you know, the only real jobs are, like, you know, going in medicine or teaching, like, stuff like that. And, like, anything else is sort of, like, you know, it's not. And his joke was, like, he's like, yeah, my mom thinks that that the only real jobs that exist are the jobs that the animals had in the busy world of Richard Scarry. And I was like, damn, that's legit. That's so funny. Like, fireman, baker, teacher. Like, there's other stuff out there you can do. So, but yeah, pay creatives more. Everyone listening, pay your people more. Thank you. The end.
Yes. So
I don't know. Did I answer that question? I feel like I went off on a massive tangent.
I mean to be fair, Kendall kind of like set the fire to that. So
yeah,
I'm cool. No. With that. I don't mind throwing gasoline on it.
Yeah, I feel like I need you to throw all the gasoline on me right now, possible, because I need some sparks right now. I'm like, yeah, this is, you know, I guess all of that being said, the PhD, the writing, loving horror, like all of it is, I do all of this because I love it. I at the end of the day, it's my choice to put myself through this. and I do it because I really I enjoy every second of it. So two of the films that I was doing my analysis for the other week were Halloween 4 and 5, guys. So that's really cool that I'm writing about that for my PhD. Like, not a lot of people get to say that they sit around doing that, you know? Yeah. So it's fruitful. It's filling. I really do love it. I sometimes worry that when all of this is over, I'm never going to watch another horror movie again. But then I open Netflix and I'm like, do they have any new horrors on here that have nothing to do with my PhD? So clearly that's not going to happen.
I think that's the whole thing, right? It's like horror never leaves you no matter what you do, career-wise or even lifestyle-wise. It's like, it's so embedded into us. It's like a relationship we're in. We're like in a very intimate relationship with horror. And yeah, people do think it's weird, but you know, it's like horror. I mean, I mentioned it to before, and I talked about it with Melissa, and I mentioned it, you know, me and Kendall talk about all the time too, that how horror is everything. Horror is everything. Even something you may not think is horror, it's horror. May not be for you, but it is for everyone else. You know, horror is not just blood, guts, and gore. You know, it's so much more than that. And I think that's what I appreciate it the most. And then I always appreciate when people like yourself, or even, you know, Marissa, who's also, you know, doing her PhD in indigenous horror, and other content creators who dive into it in the background of it. Like, I appreciate you all because you understand the genre that is not just oh, look at the slasher. It's more than that. You know, I just want to tell you that, and I'm really, really happy and proud of you for what you've been doing.
Oh, thank you. And yeah, you're right. I really, you know, that kind of ties back. I think that's probably true for, you know, all of us who love the genre. I think that different ancestral experiences, different life experiences, different heritage, we all look at, we view these things differently. And I was talking to a friend of mine who's an author, and he writes horror as well. And he was saying that, because he was like, do you watch it? What do you watch outside of the genre? And I mean, a lot of people wouldn't believe it, but I do watch movies that are not horror films. and I said, it's interesting because I find that now when I watch outside of the genre, everything kind of looks like horror to me now. You start to find normal stuff more scary than, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know, watching Sleepaway Camp. It's just you kind of start to see the different kinds of terror in real world scenarios. And I find myself being way more afraid of normal stuff than I am of let's watch insert whatever super scary movie here. That to me, I find I don't feel as afraid of that. And I find watching outside of the genre to be scared. Sometimes I watch rom-coms and I'm like, damn, that guy's fucking scary. I don't know if I can watch this.
You don't watch a creepy dude who stalks the girl for 2 weeks to make sure she says yes?
No, I don't. That's terrifying. That is the real scary shit, dude.
It's like, she said yes this time, but not tomorrow. All right,
it's so true. That's so real. Yeah, I don't know. I do think also, big horror nerd, kind of, you know, you watch other things in a different way as well, which I think is really interesting. So yeah, I agree with what you said, Jackie, about how, you know, when you are immersed in the genre, like it is intertwined with everything. And then when you come from a culture that has horror intertwined with its history of a different kind, like it kind of creates a different kind of animal, a different kind of nerd, like a different kind of horror fan. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I thank you for saying that. That was really nice.
You're very welcome. So thank you for joining us. This was such a pleasure. It's always good to have you on. Before we head out, do you want to tell our listeners where they can find you?
So you can find me on Instagram. It's just at Horror Chromatic. Here might be an underscore. I forgot. But I'm sure you guys will plug it for me to type it out. Yeah, I mean, that's probably like the best place to find me right now, because the blog is taking a Rip Van Winkle length nap at the moment, but it will be back. So I have a new piece of fiction coming out through B Infinite Publishing, and it's coming out, I think, at the end of next month. The story is called The Ivory Brush, and it was a new adventure for me. I hadn't really written a gothic inspired piece before. Most of the stuff I write is a bit more contemporary, a little bit more metal adjacent type scary. A bit more like my last piece, Heavy Metal Coffin, that I think is about a year and a half old now. It's pretty crazy. But yeah, so this is my first foray into writing a gothic piece. So keep an eye out for that as well. Yeah, other than that, I think keep an eye on the blog come January, because there's a couple little fun things that I've been working on, and I'm really excited to share them with you and to share the new logo and the new face of the website. Yay!
Nice.
Very cool. Nice. Thank you guys so much for having me back on. I really love chatting with you guys. I love doing this. Hopefully in another year or so, we can talk about another movie, because that's my favorite.
Yes, we'll find something to bring you back for.
Hell yeah, dude, I'm here. If I'm still alive, if I haven't become a skeleton, I'll be here. Even if I am a skeleton, I'll do my best.
We'll bring a skeleton on.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
No problem.
Okay. All right. So until next time, talk to you guys later. Ooh, you. Ghost goodbye.